Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We're retooling the podcast to be a platform for quick hit and publish interviews with local tech companies and anyone really that are refocusing their efforts to support the community during the coronavirus crisis. We're looking to speak with as many people as we can and release the interviews as quickly as we can turn them around. This time out, we speak with Chris Meyer, head of innovation at SolderWorks. A few hours before we spoke on March 24th, he held a meeting to discuss the future of workspaces. We continue that conversation here. You convened this meeting today.
Yes.
Because you have a very physical workspace, a very hands-on kind of workspace at SolderWorks. So tell us what SolderWorks does and how this situation is affecting you and how this led to making this meeting happen today.
SolderWorks is an incubator for early stage startups, particularly around Internet of Things, connected devices, edge computing, you know, in essence, any company or business that the value proposition is derived from hardware or the intersection of hardware and software. And so we kind of play the gap between or we bookend companies that are very early in their process, like getting up, getting a prototype, getting a pilot up and running, that might not have access to the ecosystem, the tools, or the resources without, you know, capital behind them. So we give them office space on the condition that they're moving forward and that they share what they're working on, what problems they're having with others in the program at the time. And so we bookend the early pre-accelerator kind of groups and then even ones that might have recently gotten funding as they try to figure out like how they're going to move forward. So again, with access to tools and 3D printers and electronics labs and that type of thing. So it is a very physical, visceral workspace because hardware requires specialty tools. So in my case, we've got six companies that are making use of the space. And now that we're in shelter in place, I can't give out oscilloscopes or spectrum analyzers or CNC machines to anybody. You know, one, they're hard to move. Two, they're sensitive equipment. Three, they're very, very expensive. So from my perspective and from the broader industry side, it's how can I prepare for when we can start to come back to work to get people comfortable and make sure that we're keeping our community safe? You know, whether that's, you know, hand sanitizers in every area, you know, is it shutting down the kitchen and be like, sorry, like this is a vector. So we're just going to close it down until we start to become more confident with transmission of different maladies.
Right.
So that's really the discussion that I wanted to have is how are other people thinking about the future of office work and the future of workspaces in general?
Okay. And what did we learn?
It was a great conversation this morning. I was lucky enough to have Tara O'Brien, who's the education coordinator at Boomtown, join. Katie Oblock, who's, I think, the membership manager. I don't remember her exact title, but at Galvanize. And then a few folks from the MIT Safe Paths group. Okay. So they're doing something really cool where they're trying to build out an app that uses anonymized GPS data to be able to go back and say, hey, you might have been exposed to influenza or COVID-19 at Whole Foods for 3 hours or whatever. So that's in a beta right now, but it's all open source. And so they've got a pretty solid group of folks that are working on that. So yeah, it's a really good conversation. It was great.
Was there a general consensus?
Well, at this stage in our lives today, all public spaces are closed. You know, everybody is working remotely, and even some of them, Boomtown is an interesting one because they are an accelerator and they have folks who are visiting internationally. They're in a really tough spot because if you think about, you know, they're crashing on people's couches, you know, and don't really have the space to shelter in place that some of us that live here have. So that was an interesting thing that I never really thought that, you know, people traveling or people that are here for business don't have the social constructs to be able to, you know, be comfortable really.
Right.
So that was a big eye-opening thing for me is just because Boulder is so international. That there's a number of folks that are just more or less invisible from our community perspective because they're here for a short period of time or for a specific purpose.
Yeah. People who just happen to be in town for that meeting or lecture or whatever. And
yeah. Or, you know, a 12-week program, you know, right. Students, another thing where CU has said, go home if you can. Mm-hmm. You know, my neighbor's daughter goes to Vanderbilt and they just ended classes 6 weeks early. So they're back. But if you don't have a family or a stable family structure to go back to, that would be just devastating.
Yeah. There are just so many ways for people to fall through the cracks right now. Mm-hmm. And well, people are already getting creative on how to address that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So everyone who's basically fortunate enough to be able to shelter in place, work from home, mm-hmm. What happens to all that office space that's sitting there now and that yeah. may continue to sit there, you know, for example, what happens to Galvanize?
Yep.
When everyone realizes, hey, we can do our companies remotely, everyone works from home, and yep. we don't need to pay the rent to Galvanize. So even when the all clear comes, yep. what happens to a place like Galvanize?
And so that was the meat of the conversation. So I opened up with like kind of a philosophical question. It's like, what's the point of an office? In a world when we're kind of afraid to be close to people, like what is the point of a headquarters in an office? And what I, you know, it didn't occur to me initially, but a big part of it is just camaraderie. And those personal relationships. I kind of run the gamut between extroversion and introversion. Mm-hmm. So I'm comfortable generally in both, but for people that are widely extroverted or know that they don't work well alone, not having access to that is a substantial impact. Mm-hmm. And so the point of an office is a refuge. It's camaraderie. It's that area to socialize. And I think that's as we're working from home, people are like, yeah, actually, I really do not like staying here all the time.
Right.
And what I'm realizing, and what I realized this morning that was really reinforced, is that on a line item perspective, for a lot of tech workers in particular, we're not losing a lot. But from right. a mental health perspective and a social well-being perspective, the ramifications of being full digital, like I think it's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah. I mean, I'm realizing like, okay, I can still do my work. I mean, I'm having this conversation with you right now. Mm-hmm. I'd rather it be in person in a studio. It'll sound better for one thing, but no, it's not really the work that's impacted. It is just this feeling of isolation, and it hasn't really, I'm not really feeling the bite of that yet, but the potential for that I'm sure is coming, and I'm sure other people are feeling it, and you know, and I work independently anyway, so. But it is just weird to go from a place where part of really the personality of the company mm-hmm. was this open door philosophy and being welcoming and a sense of community. And now to just take that into a digital realm, yeah. I'm really curious to see how that changes, because it's got to change.
And that was what I want to figure out is there a digital facsimile to creating those social connections, like that emotional connection with people. I don't know. I'm open yeah. to options.
Because, you know, because here we are sitting face to face and it's the first time we've met.
Yeah.
But is this the same as you and me sitting, you know, at Boxcar having a coffee? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm starting to hone in. I think we pick up so much from physical interaction that mm-hmm. adds to just, you know, you can listen in our audio stream. And, you know what we're talking about, mm-hmm. but that deeper understanding of like, is this resonating? Is it not? Like all the things like leaning in, leaning back, and you know, all these, the richness of interaction, I think it's harder to replicate. So maybe in my head, it's like, all right, well maybe virtual reality based meetings might come closer. You know, who knows, as far as like Boulder Tech podcast, maybe augmented reality could be a bigger thing. Like as we kind of go in this post COVID world, right?
Right. And that was what, and that was one thing I was, you know, one of the questions I had was, what's the next stage of the actual technology that's going to come to enhance remote work and mm-hmm. these remote meetings? You know, is it going to be augmented or virtual reality where we're, you know, in a chair wearing our goggles or whatever, but it's going to put us wherever we all decide to meet that day. Like everyone's having a lot of fun with Zoom backdrops.
Oh man, I don't know about you, but I don't like that. That drives me nuts. Yeah, I've seen it done poorly a number of times where it's like, it looks like you're standing in front of just your company logo and it looks weird.
Yeah. Did that come up at all in your meeting today in terms of, you know, AR, VR, other options? Because Zoom really, it's cool, but it,
Yeah, the augmented reality and virtual reality and how we could utilize it didn't come up in this conversation. But one of the things that I was trying to drive at was, what does it look like going forward? So in our case, like we have to have a lab. And, mm-hmm. and for hardware people, like they have to have access to these tools and development boards and all these things that are in essence a shared resource, and the nature of them is collaborative. So I was asking, Katie Oblock, who's a wonderful human being, you know, how are you guys thinking about this? And Tara O'Brien as well. It's, you know, some social contracts in the near future. You can't bring guests into the space. You can't, you have to give people a certain distance when they're in there. They move the desks apart to enable people to still be in the same space, but a little bit more of that, the bubble of personal space has gotten bigger. And then even mentors and people that are coming in to help don't do it in the shared space. So it becomes like this social contract of like, for all of us to feel comfortable, we just need to abide by this social contract. And I thought that was a really brilliant way to at least address that we're entering a new era. Like I personally, I hug people. Like I like to hug people. It's just something that I've always done. And now I'm very aware, like, okay, well, that's not an option. You know, I bumped elbows to somebody like a few days ago, and they were like, even then, like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
So, yeah, so culturally, we're going to have this shift, and at least being upfront about what those social conventions look like, having those conversations is going to have to happen. And then in a group by group basis, just understanding like, hey, this is acceptable, this is not. So that was an interesting component. And then from a tech perspective, what types of things can we build in? So, one of the things that I'm lucky enough to have access to is we built our own door control system from scratch. So we have the ability to integrate things like we were talking, hey, what if we had a door that you had to have your temperature taken before you could access, the electronics lab? So one of the things that I was ideating on was what if the infrastructure had some of these checks in place where if you were out because you were sick, it's like, okay, well, you have a cool down period to access the electronics lab, the 3D printing lab, you know, these areas that are high volume collaboration areas, or having, you know, the thermometer be built into the door locks. Like, would people be comfortable doing that? And, you know, we're mixed. Because on one hand, like if I'm healthy, like I want to know that I don't have to worry about exposure going into a shared space. But on the other hand, for people that are kind of dependent on, for people that don't have things like sick leave, entrepreneurs in particular, I have to get work done. Otherwise, my livelihood is done. So having the infrastructure be the thing that forces you from not being able to make your livelihood, like that makes a lot of people deeply uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this mix of what's the right balance. So I don't have a good solution. I personally think that in this case, in a COVID world, it's submitting to a temperature reading. It isn't that invasive considering the pandemic nature of what we're dealing with today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but knowing when that stops or when it starts to become like submitting that to your insurance, like probably isn't a good thing.
Right.
So, you know, that personal ability to control who has access to it is a very big topic right now.
Is SolderWorks, you're just completely shut right now that it's shelter in place and nobody has access, or how are you managing that before the shelter in place order came down yesterday?
We let everybody know last week, hey, come and get some of your stuff if it's critical to your business. We're gonna go dark for at least till through the end of the month until we have a better optics into what the situation is going to look like, not only for us but also for the economy in the state of Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I realize that I just want to have those social contracts, the agreement. I think what I'm going to move towards is we had a shared workspace where we had the ability for, I don't know, 50 people to work in line in like a big open space and spreading out the desks. And then instead of having one large shared lab, I'm going to break up the components into discrete lab bays. so that every bay has like the foundational equipment, but then have access to control to the ones that might be heavier used, like a spectrum analyzer or something like that.
Okay.
So that, and because we have access to the door control system, now we have some ability to be like, hey, Greg was using the spectrum analyzer. He has COVID. Like, we're going to do a 15-day mandatory cool down. So we're going to sanitize it and we're going to let it sit over the incubation period and hope that this is going to be enough for us to move forward sooner rather than, hey, we're all uncomfortable. We're going to continue this.
But you can see the problems that poses when, I mean, it's so, we're still so obviously early in this yep. that who knows? Okay. Because it's not sustainable to, even when we get the green light to go back to whatever life is going to be like, it's not sustainable to say you're rolling for a month and then somebody's temperature is elevated all of a sudden and now you have to shut it down for 2 weeks. That's no way to run or build a business.
Yeah. So in that case, yeah, I'm just, that's my short-term thinking. You know, I think we all want to be more cautious than loose. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I've been looking at is using UVC lights, which they've been using for some level of sterilization of hospitals and certain things. So mandatory, put your phone in this sterilization chamber before you can come in.
Right.
And then even figuring out some way where maybe nightly, I know a number of robotics companies that have been working on this where they use the ultraviolet light to sanitize the spaces. Mm-hmm. Just blast it with high energy light to hopefully rupture the virus cell walls and all that stuff. So I don't know. They'll play with it. We'll see.
Is that something that's economically feasible for companies to have that kind of a lighting system?
As far as the autonomous distribution of it, probably not. That's more hospital and like in industrial settings for sure. Mm-hmm. But for the thing that has the most germs on any of us is our phone, right? So for like small scale sanitation, I think that might be a little bit more viable. But you know, because we're in essence a hacker mindset. So if we could figure out like how to build one, cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is it feasible? You know, we're like a space like yours. It's still a co-working space, but only one person or one group of people can be there at a time. Is that
I definitely see that as viable. And I think that a lot of that goes into, you know, just communication. Thankfully, there in hardware, there's still a lot of software to write. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it actually forces you to do this, you know, okay, how am I going to prepare to make use of the hardware and the testing time that I have? So I think for, at least for us, like that's viable, limiting it to three businesses at a time in their individual workspaces, and then making sure to schedule it out, like maybe broad scheduling criteria for that.
And part of the social contract is an actual obligation to scrub the place down on your way out.
Yep. Yep. And then, you know, then we start entering the whole personal protection, you know, access to sterilization equipment and wipes and bleach and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Do you see this having an effect on things culture-wise in term? I mean, we already talked about the camaraderie and being together. But do you see it maybe, like, for example, if you have to share, like sharing a space, but on a more limited basis, do you think that might slow things down in a good way and kind of reduce our on-demand expectations?
My personal take is maybe not. Just so my take is that because we're having like this type of interaction now all the time, that it's not going to change. It's just going to shift where the physical space now becomes, I have to be here because there's things that I need here. Mm-hmm. Whereas from a work-life balance perspective, I feel like this is going to be you're on demand at all times. Just because it's, hey, like, yeah, I know that you
not
have
the answer I was looking for, Chris.
I we just have to be better about being like, look, I don't answer and I don't do calls after certain times or, you know, that do not disturb.
Right.
I personally found in the office, like there were times where I wasn't as productive, but I had more impromptu conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I would have my task list in front of me, but I wouldn't get to a lot of it, you know, because the other things were coming up and I was having discussions while valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But what I see happening now is that like I'll have my task list in front of me and I'll probably knock off more of that. But now I'm adding to that more frequently.
Yeah.
Just because I'm not stopping to have those social interactions as much.
It just seems like, right now in this current phase of things, you know, I just had a call with someone who's planning something for mid-April.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems so far away. Like, wow, mid-April.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, let's put it on the calendar and hold the date and I guess act if that's going to happen. But really all there is right now, I think it's just really showing us that really all there is this moment right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was trying to set up an interview with someone and he said, I'm really busy this week. How about next week? And I said, that's up to the virus, basically. So I don't know. I guess I was just thinking about maybe it'll put us more in the moment.
Yeah.
What can we accomplish right now?
Yeah. I might have misinterpreted your question. I interpreted it as, do you think this will disconnect people and be more aware? And I think that we're going to be very in the moment to the degree where I've actually personally experienced this. We're like, exactly what you're talking about. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. I got to do this right now.
Right.
Because it's valuable right now. And if I don't do it right now, tomorrow's going to come and I'm going to be like, dang it, I wish I would have done that yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. It's so...
Yeah, 100%. In that regard, yes. I think everybody's going to be very aware of how temporal the current conditions are.
Yeah. And I hope that is something that... I like to think that on balance will be a possible benefit.
Yep.
From this.
Yep. I was thinking about doing, we had a few projects like last week that were like, oh, this is looking good. We're going to sign the contract. We're going to get started. Like, there's no rush. So we're feeling good about it. And now, you know, this week we're like, man, I wish I would have gotten that check last week.
Right. I need to get that invoice in right now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So there's a little bit of that, maybe not fear, but it's just, for me, it's, If you're adding value today, like get it out. It doesn't matter if it's polished or not, but you have to just deliver.
Yeah. And I was also wondering about, you know, like just like the meaning of being, does the meaning of being in the loop change when there's less shared space? Is it as easy to be in the loop with Zoom and Slack as it is to be literally in this office together?
See, I don't feel the desire to be in the loop, or not the desire, but like, I don't feel like I'm missing out from like mm-hmm. an in-the-loop perspective. What I do find myself doing, and Joel, maybe tell me if you're feeling the same thing, but it's easy to follow along with, I don't know about you, but I've got like 15 Slack organizations that I'm a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping up with that is now like, all right, I got to close my computer. I got to shut down because it's just, there are so many conversations happening all over the place. And you have that history that's accessible now. Whereas mm-hmm. if a conversation happens in the office, the moment the conversation is over, it's over, unless you have somebody tell you about it.
Yeah.
But in Slack and these other ones, it's like, okay, there is 10,000 messages that happened since I stepped away like a few hours ago. And I can go back and read them if I want.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's changed a little bit of my perspective on like what it means to be in the loop, right?
Yeah. Maybe I don't want to be in the loop so much, as much.
Oh yeah. I've doubled down on dinner is sacred. So at 5 o'clock, I'm shutting everything down. I'm going to cook dinner. I'm having dinner with my family. And that is the sacred part of the day.
Yeah.
And that's really reinforced, you know, with uncertainty recently where it's like, that's what I care about.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to really, I think, change kind of, you know, obviously change our relationship with time and space.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Because there's only so much time to do so much. And then the whole, you know, I mean, space now, we're all in our own space, but even when shared space becomes a doable thing again, we're going to have these bigger personal bubbles. So that makes a place like Galv and I don't know, how is that going to be affected? Because if they're trying to cram as many people in there as they can and sell as much desk space as they can, and it's not like people are uncomfortable there, but they're in pretty close quarters, and that's going to feel a lot closer now. So what do they do?
No, and this is where I think that social contract and being upfront as to what it means to be a member of a community in physical proximity, right? I think that's going to take a lot of, once you find that right balance, I don't think that that's going to be as concerning from a business perspective on something like that. Yeah, they're just going to have to lower their capacity. Right. And I imagine like the city of Boulder and the state of Colorado might have updated revisions as to here's the protocols for shared spaces. And I also see, I personally think that technology is going to play a bigger part of this, where I think that access control, who has access, when they can have access, scheduling access, we're going to be a little bit tighter about that, you know, going forward. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see the ramifications for stuff like that.
So what, aside from the social contract, would make you feel comfortable to go back to the office?
I think it's just making sure to reinforce before you step in this space, you have to use hand sanitizer or wash your hands. Mm-hmm. I think the sanitation of or at least doing this occasionally, sanitizing our phones is going to be like a bigger thing. And then just that overall awareness as to each other. It's going to be a bigger thing for sure.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot about the efficacy of masks in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that, you know, the N95, the 0.3 micron particulate filter is the only thing that's effective on COVID. But from what I've been reading, masks in general is very helpful in not spreading anything that you might have. Less about keeping yourself from contracting. So I don't know if we're going to adopt a lot of the Asian community's acceptance, social acceptance of wearing masks in public. So it'll be interesting.
I was talking to someone about that the other day. There's a new market right there, you know, stylish masks and gloves.
Yeah.
And maybe even eyewear.
Yeah. And so maybe I don't see it going into a full dystopian where that's what everybody's wearing all the time. But as far as making it as somebody that has a space that they're providing access to, I think having the ability for people to have access to those things, depending on their comfort level, I think is going to be very important.
Yeah. Did you come up with any collaborative next steps in your meeting?
Yeah. So Katie was really nice enough to send out the Galvanize protocols and what they're doing, their sanitation mm-hmm. process and some of that stuff. And then there was a few other discussions over what universities in like Singapore or other ones that have like that huge volume of people are now adapting towards and what's been successful there and adopting the ones that are seem to be more efficacious.
Right. What else?
We're going to continue the conversation, but the one of the things was volunteering potentially for the Safe Paths group. So that's an open source app for anonymized tracking. So that way hospitals and individuals can be better aware of how these things spread, how you might have had exposure and that type of thing.
Okay. If any of our listeners want to get in touch, to get involved, offer solutions or whatever, what's the best way to do that?
There's a number of websites that you can go and join, take a look at, and then they have forms for volunteer lists. Particularly right now at SafePath, if you're a developer, particularly iOS or Android, or any sort of front-end web developer, they're looking for help there.
Mm-hmm.
There's another group called Helpful Engineering that does a lot where they're actually doing open source ventilator projects, because that's one of the biggest concerns, especially in Italy, is they have to chain up ventilators just because of the nature of the respiratory disease itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that the healthcare system is overwhelmed, those become the choking point. That's a horrible dad joke. I apologize. And there's the tech community is doing some interesting things. Like GM is now pumping out ventilators for the US. Elon Musk just donated, I think, 100,000 to California hospitals. 3D printing masks and respirators is a really interesting thing that at the worst case, you have better 3D printing skills. At the best case, maybe you can provide some personal protection equipment for somebody that's on the front lines. Mm-hmm. Our nurses, our doctors, our hospitals, if there's something, if it even dilutes their exposure by 50%, it's better than nothing. I know Prusa has been sending out, Prusa is a 3D printer company, but they've been sending out a lot of the files for face shields, like how to rapidly create face shields for healthcare workers in particular.
Yeah, I was talking to some CU business professors earlier today, and they said one of their students was working on making the headbands that hold on the face shields.
Yep.
3D printing those and sharing the plans out to whoever wants to start making this.
So it's cool that the kind of hacker maker community is trying to mobilize. Now there's the big concern where if you don't know much about medicine, like probably ask somebody that knows about medicine what you could do to help. That instead of just spinning your wheels on something that, you know, it's great if you're learning, but if you're doing it because you want to help, there's probably better ways to do it. I think the other thing is like, just our community is super important. Like reach out to everybody, see how people are doing. Really, really important. Or if you have the ability to help, like, let me know. Like, I know that all the municipalities in the area have been trying to figure out how to mobilize, you know, people that can run errands for people, do a grocery run for somebody that's in the high risk category. You know, those types of things just to keep things moving. Yeah. For my part, I'm trying to figure out how to do digital workshops to, you know, keep people engaged. And from my point, like promote Internet of Things. Like this is a great time to kind of tinker with a business idea. If you have the resources, if not, like, let me know, I can probably figure out a way to get them to you.
It's a time to get creative and a time to pull together.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that happening. Everyone down the chain seems to be, in most places that I'm aware of, pulling in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just putting together a strategy webinar for businesses to kind of hold out in this. So, you know, if that's something that, if you're a consultancy or if you're a tech company that's looking at their balance sheet, trying to figure out how they're going to weather the storm, let's all kind of collaborate on what that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to somebody yesterday from helpmainstreet.com. They threw up a site really quickly to help businesses around across the country. And now they're getting requests from international companies as well to, you know, we need to sell gift cards to stay going, keep going.
Yeah.
Dojo 4, where I work out of virtually now, remotely now, they put together a listing for just for Boulder businesses. KeepOurTownAlive.online is the site for Boulder businesses to be there for people, for us all to be there for each other.
That's, yeah. Yeah. For sure. We got to get through it.
We got to get through it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And together is the way to do it. Chris Meyer, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Joel. I appreciate it. Looking forward to doing this in the future more.
That was Chris Meyer from SolderWorks. Follow him on Twitter at AdmireTheMeyer. That's M-E-Y-E-R. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. And again, if you or your company or organization have switched your focus to helping solve the many problems caused by the coronavirus pandemic, and you'd like to come on the podcast to talk about it, reach me at joel@dojo4.com or DM me on Twitter at Boulder TechCast. Thanks for listening. Stay healthy and safe, wash your hands, maintain that physical distancing, and we'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.